I want to turn now to Professor Craig McKenzie from the Department of Psychology. And this is a fascinating topic. Can we increase our creativity?
Thank you very much. So I think everybody would agree, first of all, that creativity is important, but also that people have different baseline levels of creativity. That is, just some people are more creative than others. I think we see that around us as well. But probably nobody is as creative as they could be. And so the question really is, how can we help people reach their creative potential? So in the same way that college, you might see college is helping people reach their intellectual potential, how can we help people reach their creative potential? So what I've tried to do is take a step back, take a look at the literature, which if you've tried to take a look at this literature, it tends to be very large, it tends to be very disconnected and so on. So what I've tried to do is a few things. One is impose structure on this pretty wacky literature, try to distill the important points, and also try to highlight themes that cut across individual, group, and organizational creativity. So any novel contribution that I am going to have today, assuming that there is one, it's not going to be in the different parts that I mentioned, but it's going to be in trying to synthesize these parts into some coherent whole. So as I mentioned, there are four themes that cut across creativity at the different levels. The first one, I'll just list them, and then I'm going to go through a little bit more detail, a very small amount of detail on each one. First one is just that this general problem is that people tend to immediately focus on a very small number of alternatives. The second is that knowing a lot is extremely helpful. And the third is that it's not just a knowing a lot that's extremely helpful, but you have to be able to access that information, and that sort of gets tricky at the individual, group, and organizational level. And then the final lesson that cuts across all of these is that trying to increase creative behavior is hard work. If you want to get above your baseline level of creativity, it's going to take some active management. It just isn't going to happen on its own. So first of all, this first theme that cuts across all levels is this, what I'm calling the creativity problem. Again, it's this immediate focus on a small number of alternatives. It seems deeply ingrained in us. We often, if you're not even considering beyond the status quo, then you're considering zero options. And mindless conformity might actually be a large part of our day, or of our lives even. You see this in idea generation. You see this in problem-solving, decision-making, hypothesis testing. It's ubiquitous. And it's why we consider, for example, brainstorming and collaboration to be important, because it helps us enlarge that menu of options to choose from. But it's also why, and also why we think groupthink is problematic, because in groupthink you have a group really focus on a single alternative, a single decision, a single solution, and people who deviate from that are punished. So that's the general problem. What do we do about it? Well, it turns out knowledge, like I said, who knew? Knowledge is important, right? But in this particular context, it's crucial. Depth of knowledge, some of you are familiar with the 10,000-hour rule, which says essentially in any cognitively complex domain, you needed about 10,000 hours of practice. What you're doing there is mastering the existing state of the art before you can put your own mark on it, and that's required in any cognitively complex domain. Breadth of knowledge is important in any domain. It doesn't have to be cognitively complex in this case. So knowing something about a lot of different areas is crucial to creativity. Why? For the simple reason that new ideas tend to be rooted in old ideas. So anytime, you know, new ideas don't come out of thin air. Whenever there's a new idea, a new product, a new process, you can trace that back to old ideas that people had. Usually they're coming in new combinations, for example. So I don't have a lot of time, but some quick examples are with the Wright brothers and their powered flight. Turns out they basically built, to some extent, a bicycle with wings. Their expertise in bicycles led them to want to think about controlling an airplane in terms of upsetting the equilibrium for turning and then restoring equilibrium, just the same way you turn a bicycle. That was a big key to their success. Edison was an expert in telegraphy, which led directly to his invention of the phonograph. There are some examples over here you can see on the screen of one of the most famous paintings of the 20th century by Picasso, and you can see some influence by other things he was familiar with on the bottom of the screen there. So that's at the individual level. Know lots of things. Okay, how do you do that at the group level? Turns out it's easy at the group level, right? You recruit people who are, experts in a variety of domains. So you can get breadth and depth simultaneously in a group. So what you want is cognitive diversity of members at the group level and at the organizational level. Now, again, that's not enough. So, now, for example, as individuals, we know lots of stuff. It was just mentioned, we have tons of information in our head. The problem with individuals is that we have access only to a small amount of it at any given time. So, for example, memory tends, some of these ways to overcome this on the screen here have to do with the fact that that memory is cue dependent. So what you want to do is mix up the cues in the environment that get you thinking about different things. So change your environment, interact with different people, go to different places, and so on. So those are some ways to access that information that's inside individuals' heads. Now, at the group level, the problem is that, so you have these diverse individuals, but maybe they don't have much common, maybe they're afraid to express their ideas. The social component of group creativity is always very powerful. So people, you know, whenever you express a new idea, you're vulnerable. People can tell you why it's a stupid idea, and they will. Right? That tends to be what people do right away. So in groups, you really have to make people feel comfortable to express ideas. So you have all this latent information, but you need to get it out, and that requires active management in a group setting. Diversity can stimulate new thoughts as well. When you hear somebody give an idea that's very different from anything you were thinking about, that stimulates new thoughts and so on. In organizations, you have, again, lots of people, diverse information, lots of experts, but they can be physically separate. They can have different cultures. You know, so marketing and engineering, they have different cultures. They're physically separate and so on. So you need to bring these people together. You need to, again, have to make them feel comfortable about sharing ideas. Give them resources. Google's 20% time is famous. Allow people to make mistakes, right? If you punish mistakes, all you're going to get is people who aren't going to, when they try new things and they get punished, all you're going to do is teach people not to try new things. Pixar, Ed Catmull at Pixar, he talks about, you know, they've been so successful making movies there as really the result of thousands of ideas from hundreds of different people in the organization. And so there, it's crucial to their success to make it safe for everybody to offer new ideas. So having said all that, then really what this is going to come down to, it's going to be hard work. So increasing creative behavior is an active process. So in individuals, the natural tendency is to consider this small number of alternatives, to judge ideas quickly. Increasing depth and breadth of knowledge is costly in terms of time, money, effort. So if you're going to break routines, meet new people, think abstractly, seek disconfirming evidence, all of these sorts of things, they go against people's natural tendencies. And so all these things are going to need to be actively overcome. In groups, again, the issue is going to be, you know, if you leave groups to their own, groups have tons of potential. So you can probably get the most bang for your buck by working on group creativity. But left to their own devices, things can go horribly wrong, and you guys are all familiar with groupthink. So here you have to actively manage as well, so along the lines of some of the ways described on this screen. And then in organizations, what are their natural tendencies? Well, punish failure, minimize risk and uncertainty, be efficient, focus on the short run, separate functions from each other. These are all perfectly reasonable things, perfectly natural things for organizations to do. They just turn out to be at odds with creativity. And so, again, if you want an organization that's going to be more creative than it currently is, these are the sort of things that are going to have to be actively managed. Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much, Craig. That was very provocative. Let's see if we have a question or two here before we keep going. Yes, good. That's fine.
How do you actively manage something that is naturally against something that is natural? And here I'm thinking of...
Well, it's the only thing one can actively manage. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to actively manage it. So take groups, for example. So if you just let groups form on their own, so say you're giving out a classroom assignment to take something local here, and let them form groups on their own, people are going to form groups based on people similar to themselves. We like people who are similar to us, right? They have the same tastes and so on. So you need to manage that. You need to actively go out and hand-pick a group so that you know that they're diverse, they have expertise in different areas, and so on. You need to make it clear to the group that offering new ideas is the goal, design the situation so that they're comfortable putting their ideas out on the table and not being punished for new ideas and so on. So that's what I mean by active management.
I mean,
we could run through it at all the different levels. Yeah. So I'm not sure what you mean by discipline in this context. No, I'm not sure what the connection between academic disciplines and active management.
I think we have a question over on the right here.
So great talk. I've read one management book in my life, and the only thing I remember from it is if you can't measure it, you can't manage it. So do you have objective measures of creativity that you use in your experiments to increase creativity?
First, I don't do experiments in creativity, which is both good and bad. So my area, actually, I study decision-making and rationality. Gotten into creativity and found some interesting relationships between creativity and decision-making and even between creativity and rationality, so it's been fun playing around with these ideas. But in terms of measurement, I think it's going to be very context-specific. So there are creativity tests, for example, but they're all over the place. And so some of you are familiar with them, you know, like unusual uses tasks, for example, will measure how many unusual uses you can come up with something. Now, if you're in a particular, say, new product development context, I think you could have measures. It could be that, you know, maybe we're going to have a brainstorming session and we're going to see how many ideas we can come up with, for example. Or we can see how many new products we can launch in the next 12 months. So you can quantify it depending upon the particular context. I don't think there's any question. Now, whether those are good measures or not would probably require some discussion and some debate, but it can definitely be done. I mean, there will be deliverables when it comes to being creative.
One last question.
Okay, thank you. Yes. I'm just curious how you see this sort of pseudo or real science of design coming into the creative process.
Ooh, a politically charged question that I'm
supposed
to answer?
No, I just think that design is important and that we, you know, I was at the seminar yesterday and we were talking about all this creative stuff today, but we never think of design as an area that we should be teaching or thinking about. How do we design systems?
Right.
So, how does the creative process interact with design?
So very briefly, what I would say is, you know, design, you know, being creative is certainly going to be part of being good at design. And I do think teaching design, part of teaching design in any context is going to be about how to be more creative and how to, you know, in this case, it might be manage a group, for example. So the courses I teach in psychology and at Rady now, they're all about how to increase creative behavior at the individual, group, and organizational level. I think it can be done, and design would be one context in which that would be relevant, I think.